Hey, if you're looking for more action on the road, check out what Cutting Audio's got. Deathlands. Outlanders. The Executioner. Stony Man. We're loaded for bear. Available at road stops everywhere or at www.cuttingaudio.com.
Cutting Audio.
A 100 years ago, a rain of nuclear bombs obliterated civilization in a few minutes of blazing horror. It was the end of the world. Doomsday, sky dark. With the first nuclear explosion, the tissue-thin tapestry of civilization was ripped apart. The rule of law was replaced overnight with the somber, draconian edict of survival of the fittest. Cannibals hunted prey, cold hearts brutally raided farms, and slavers seized anybody they could as chattel. Electricity was seldom seen, starvation universal, rape a daily event, death the only known means of escape. This is America in the late 21st century. Welcome to the Deathlands. Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 50, Pandora's Redoubt. The handle of the door to the Matrans chamber moved a fraction of an inch, the hinges screeching in protest at the intrusion. Muffled curses came from the other side as the stubborn handle grudgingly moved and promptly jammed again. More curses. Then the locking mechanism disengaged with an echoing clank of heavy steel on steel. The door was muscled open, and seven armed people charged into the hexagonal chamber beyond. A badly scarred man with a patch covering one eye was the last inside, and he stood ready to close the door behind them to trigger a jump.
Dark Knight. We made it. I knew we could outrun it.
J.B. Dix, a short, wiry man, removed his well-worn fedora to rub a grimy sleeve across his sweaty forehead.
Gaia, we're lucky the lava found the elevator shaft to fall down.
Christy Roth's sentient crimson hair tightened protectively about her lovely face.
Gran helped.
Jack Lauren, a slim, snowy-haired albino teen, walked across the chamber and sat on one of the discs set into the floor.
Grans always help.
Keeping a close watch on the door behind them, Dean Carter scowled and said nothing, but shifted the grip on his Browning high-power pistol as if in preparation for an attack.
Do you think he can get through the door?
Dr. Mildred Wyeth shifted her backpack of medical supplies on her shoulders. Doc Tanner took his usual spot on the floor.
The thermal inversion gradient of the armaglass portal is not precisely known, but as this establishment was theoretically designed to be nuke-proof, I would extrapolate that the defensive yield potential is...
Door!
Jack pointed past the one-eyed man. Spinning, Ryan Carter saw that the access door to the control room was slowly bulging inward, distending like the bloated belly of a starving man, horribly straining at the resilient alloy framework. The reek of sulfur hit them as yellow steam spurted around the edges and the walls on either side began to glow warmly. Then a wave of dry heat washed over the group, stinging their eyes and searing exposed flesh. Doc pulled out his huge Lamar pistol for no sane reason.
By the three Kennedys, The lava is here! Everybody sit down!
Ryan started to close the door to the Matrans unit, but he was unable to remove his gaze from the terrible scene outside. Although stretching like warm taffy, the trembling door to the control room was still in place. The walls on either side, however, were turning orange from the volcanic heat.
Soon yellow, then white. Then it'll soften and melt away.
Sweat dripped off Christie's chin, and JB loosened the color of his jacket.
We'll be long gone by then. Got a minute yet. Maybe two.
As he spoke, the glowing walls beyond the chamber shattered in a crackling explosion, the remaining chunks peeling away like a flower blossoming to the sun, and white-hot lava began to thickly pump into the control room. Beyond the yellowish haze, they could see only an endless plain of reddish flames. Once Ryan saw that all of the companions were properly seated on the floor, he slammed the door shut, triggering the jump mechanism, and quickly went to sit beside Christie. Immediately, the usual mist filled the chamber, engulfing the seven friends, sparks forming around them like newborn stars. Drawing his 9mm Sig Sauer pistol, Ryan could just barely see the deadly lava flow, inexorably rising higher and higher, moving toward them, the locked door standing ludicrously upright in the lambent field of molten stone. If the Matrans unit failed to work because of damage from the lava, then he'd use the pistol. First on Christie, then on the others and himself. It'd be a lot quicker than burning alive. He glanced at her and saw she already had her own .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver out and was looking at him. They shared a moment of understanding, more intimate than any embrace. Then, a great surge of power filled their bodies from within as a subsonic hum tore them apart. The universe yawned wide as all eternity. Instantly, they embarked on a sub-electronic journey toward an unknown destination, possibly into the great abyss itself. Well over one century old, the pre-dark matter transfer chambers sent travelers randomly to other units, the secret of their precise control lost forever. As always, during the time the friends were unconscious, hallucinations filled their minds, idyllic dreams and mad visions, phantasms of old enemies, bloody battles, and sexual fantasies. But on this journey, the visions died before being truly formed. Suddenly, solid flooring was beneath Ryan's back, and he was reeling a bit from the usual aftershocks of being instantly transferred to a new destination. As the mist began to thin, Ryan lay still, a pounding headache momentarily clouding his vision. The masking clouds of mist were unusually thick this time. Or was it the sulfur fumes? The awful heat of the lava seemed still to be with him, and he tried to force breath into his heaving chest. Hot. He was so hot, and needed to draw a lungful of air. But he seemed unable to pull atmosphere inside his aching body. Was this another of the hallucinations? He had never dreamed of arriving before. Had they gone anywhere? Or were they still reduced to electronic signals pulsing along the hidden network of the worldwide web of Matrans units, yet to arrive? Perhaps never to arrive. Fireblast. There were times that he hated these bastard machines. Slowly, the mists dissipated, but his vision was still oddly obscured. Squinting his good eye, Ryan saw the others working their mouths, as if trying to draw air into their lungs. Christie was on her hands and knees.
Can't breathe.
Her prehensile hair hung limply, as if the living strands of crimson were unconscious. Her chest rose and fell unnaturally as she tried to gather air. Jack had managed to get to his feet and leaned weakly against one of the armaglass walls. He began to drip sweat, black stains spreading over his camo-colored vest. JB was on his stomach, his beloved fedora bunched in a white-knuckled hand. Gasping, Mildred was tearing at the crew neck of her t-shirt, desperate to get restrictive clothing away from her throat. His ebony sword stick lying at his feet, Doc grimaced as if in the grip of an invisible fist, squeezing the very life out of him. Clutching the Browning to his chest, Dean stood stock still, as if dead and ready to topple over. Clearly, there was no more time to wait. Ryan had to know if they were safe, or should chance another jump immediately. Summoning strength, the one-eyed man forced himself to step out of the jump unit, half expecting his feet to vanish into fiery ash. But his worn combat boots thumped onto a solid floor. There was no lava. The black-walled chamber was empty except for them. Thankfully, they had jumped to a different redoubt. Yet the heat was still here, cooking them to death.
Something's wrong.